he can only hold for so long. The lights are on, but no one's home.
Hey, we just heard Amy Winehouse with He Can Hold Her. I watched her, the documentary about her from 2015 over the weekend. It's like, I've been talking about this, like I listened to the Britney Spears memoir and even Julia Fox's memoir. And it's kind of like all this like 2000s, mid to late 2000s, like pre-social media, just craziness that's happening with paparazzi, and it made me so sad watching the documentary, thinking about that. And then I saw this interview, or no, this someone was talking about Amy Winehouse and how maybe she was too real, like with the fans, or she let you in, she was too vulnerable, like people like Bowie or Prince or these other like really talented musicians whose careers spend like decades, they have this whole like enigma around them and like persona and distance with the audience, and maybe Amy Winehouse wasn't able to kind of solidify that enigma. I don't know, it's interesting how people can like take over the public imagination in so many different ways, and I just love her so much, and I kept thinking like, her career could have gone on longer, or she just could have kept on going longer and see how her life may end up. All right, but that's enough of these ramblings. It's Radio Ravioli. It's WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, 91.9 FM and online WFMU.org. Stay tuned because Mark Kirst is coming up next.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour here on WFMU, Freeform Station of the Nation, live from Studio A in downtown Jersey City, in that great state of New Jersey, right here at the Magic Factory. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm so glad you have chosen to join me, whether you're live or one of those time travelers in the future. Happy to have you. I had an interesting experience over the last week. I had occasion to listen through, not all the way through, but sample through a few of episodes of years past, Tectonic episodes. This show has been going since September of 2017, so listeners know I just passed the 300 episode mark just a few weeks ago, and so there's a bunch. There's literally hundreds of episodes of Tectonic over the past however many years it's been, and it has developed. And first thing I want to say right off is, if you have been listening to the show for some number of years, and maybe there's a few of you who've been listening since the very beginning, I really want to thank you for your patience, because I listen to some of these shows from the first, the first 3 years, let's say. And it's like, eesh, a little crunchy, still finding my sea legs there. But I will say, and I'm putting this on me, the guests, when you listen to the guests are, as a rule, they are excellent. And they're telling us important things. I was just still trying to figure out how to run the show, which, by the way, I'm still trying to figure out. But I think I've got it a little more in hand than I did a few years ago. So thank you to the longtime listeners for sticking with me, for your patience, your forbearance. But the reason I want to bring this up is that going through some of those old conversations, you hear some of these guests from years past saying there is a certain problem, or there is a certain way we should look at this particular technology, or there is this way that technology could develop that could be for better or for worse. We have to really keep an eye on it. And years later, you're listening to it now, and you go, man, they were right. They were right on it. They were so right to direct us to think in this way. And yet, even though, perhaps Tectonic was not the only show they were on. Perhaps they have their own show, or they went to speak at other places. Maybe they wrote articles. Most of them have written books. All of the work that these guests have done, this is what I'm trying to get at. The guests have been trying to teach us, to educate us, to guide us to better decisions with technology over the years, and look at where we are. And week after week, I report to you that this large technology company has done this outrageous thing, or excuse me, this new trend is being hyped up in ways that are totally irrational and dangerous. And more often than not, those developments we had warnings years ago. And so you think, what must it be like for people to issue these warnings and to see society continue on its path of overvaluing technology, making the wrong decisions so often? And that brought me to this thought that, you know, here we are in 2024. I'm recording this live, January 29, 2024. And let me just flip this on you, because rather than thinking about the past, the warnings we received in the past from past guests, let's think about the people in the future who are going to be looking back on us today and evaluating our decisions that we made today. Okay, so let's give ourselves a clean slate right now. Let's say here we are in January 2024. It's a new year. All of us have some capacity to make decisions, but you know, honestly, it's really the society-wide decisions about adoption of technology, which is what I'm after here. I'm realistic that one individual here or there making a change, although important, is really not the script. What we're after is, what are the major decisions that we're facing as a community, as a society, today, in this new year, and how are those decisions about what technology we adopt, what technology we choose to place our faith in, what technology we get excited about and tell each other about, commit to, how are those decisions going to be evaluated in coming years when people look back on us in 2024? And interestingly enough, there was a past guest who got me thinking along these lines. There was a show back in 2022, so not that long ago, a little over a year ago, October 3rd, 2022, I had on the show Douglas Rushkoff, who's an old friend. This, I think, was his second time on the show. And he was talking about his new book at the time called Survival of the Richest, Escape Fantasies of the Tech Billionaires. And I just want to play for you 2 minutes of that interview. Actually, it's the opening 2 minutes, as it happens, of that conversation with Douglas. Because he said something, and Douglas is so, he's often very thought-provoking and makes you think about things in a new way. I really like and respect Douglas. He started with something that got me thinking about our decisions, our choices that we're making today, if we think about it from the perspective of people in the future. So I'm going to play this. Again, this is Douglas Rushkoff, just a couple of minutes long, from the October 3rd, 2022 Tectonic. Here's what he said.
You know, we are all embedded in an environment where it's very difficult to live as we might want to. So I was walking with a friend last night, and he was a little bit upset about how, you know, the founding fathers are all getting, you know, taken out of history because of their complicity or participation in slavery. And I said, you know, the interesting thing about it to me is, you know, when they look back on us right now, let's say they look at Douglas Rushkoff, this kind of Marxist anarcho-syndicalist media theorist, who nonetheless is using a Macintosh computer. And we know from his articles on Medium that he was fully aware that there was slave labor involved in the getting the resources for it. And he threw out his Mac, you know, Pro 100 to get the Mac Pro 200. He knew that went in a toxic waste dump where little South American children are picking over it. So isn't he, and he bought at Costco. We're taking his name off the good guys list too. I mean, aren't we participating in systems of slavery and abuse and pollution and climate? Yes. So it's hard to know, you know, and then you look all the way back, Abraham in the Bible, he had slaves, you know, and that's where the Isaac came from, Hagar came from. And it's like, well, that's horrible. And we say, oh, well, you know, for the time, that's what they did. And for our time, this is what we do. What if, no, what if, you know, it's hard to know how we are complicit. And on the one hand, I don't like that we are being blamed on the consumer level as individuals for everything that's going on in the world. But on the other, it's like, well, where does the buck stop? Who finally has the high leverage point? As I discovered, the billionaires don't think they are high leverage points in making these decisions. So, you know, someone else is going to have to make systemic change.
And that again was Douglas Rushkoff speaking to me on Tectonic on October 3rd, 2022. And I hope you see why I was excited to play that excerpt for you, given the theme tonight about making choices, because here's Douglas saying this issue of complicity it's a sticky topic, because we can point at someone else and say, look at the choices they made to do X, Y, and Z, when in future generations they may say, look at Douglas or look at Mark using a Mac laptop full of conflict minerals that involved in some place in the supply chain forced labor, whether in Africa somewhere, or we've heard about Apple suppliers in China who may or may not be using forced labor. I did a show on that with Amelia Pong a couple of years ago. Anyway, the choices we make today are very likely to be judged harshly by future generations. And so you can think, well, you know, what are we supposed to do with technology? What are the choices we're supposed to make with technology? Are we supposed to turn it all off and go live in a cave? Well, that's not very realistic. That's difficult to live in the modern world and have a job and so on, healthcare and to be a part of society if you're gonna try not to be complicit in anything at all. On the other hand, we do have agency, and to my point before, we're part of a society that is making large changes, large decisions, large choices about technology right now in 2024 that's going to set us on a new path. And so this is all to say there are no easy answers. I don't see this as a Manichaean, you know, good versus bad. But I think it's worth working on our powers of discernment to look at the available choices we have and to think, is this the path we want to be on? And I want to give you an example, because I want to refer to another recent interview, which is going to tee this up. Back on December 11, 2023, I spoke with Guillaume Pitron, who is a French journalist who wrote a book called The Dark Cloud, which was talking about the environmental impact of digital technology. And this, I think, is going to be a series of choices that will be likely judged fairly harshly by future generations when they look back and say, you did what? You chose what? you chose what now? Because as I said, and by the way, all of these links are on the playlist. If you go to WFMU.org, click playlists and comments, you can see I've put these links here, and there's a link to the show with Guillaume Pitron that has, I don't know, 10 or 12 links to articles. So you can go deep. I've put the resources out there. You can do the research. You can do the reading. And you can see what you think. But I just want to give you a couple of little factoids that I got from two of the sources that I linked on that playlist. One, and again, I'm just reading the quote from the story, which you can see on the playlist. Quote, talking about ChatGPT, this OpenAI chatbot that everyone's using now. Quote, a 20-question conversation with ChatGPT equates to half a liter of water use, about the size of a water bottle. Okay, so think what they're saying is when you go to ChatGPT and you start typing questions, can you write me a limerick? What did you think about the Great Gatsby? How do you build a house with cinder blocks in Arizona? Or whatever weird question you want to ask. You ask 20 of those questions, and the energy and water usage really starts to add up. The water being important because you're cooling, the water needs to cool the computers at the data center, wherever it is in the cloud, that OpenAI is using in order to draw on these massive resources, computational resources, to extrude out this string of text, which may or may not be accurate, but look, you know, here's your limerick, and this is what you wanted. So we spent all of this energy and all this water in order to deliver you this. So 20-question conversation with ChatGPT is a bottle of water. Which you may think, well, that's not much, just a bottle of water. I'm not going to get into the whole rabbit hole right now, but again, read the resources on that Guillaume Pitron playlist, because you'll see that there are some places in the U.S. that are starting to go dry because the data center, the big tech data centers, are starting to suck down all of the clean water, the clean drinking water. Clean water that could be used for drinking, cooking, bathing, and so on. No, we're using it to cool computers so that people can ask ChatGPT to write them a limerick. Okay, here's the other one. This is about image creation. And image creation is also very energy and resource intensive. This is where people say, draw me a picture of, I don't know, an elephant on a beach, and it goes and it, you know, it looks at all of the images in its database and mashes them up like one giant Play-Doh extruder and just pushes it out. There's your elephant on a beach. And this is what this source was, a Gizmodo article. Quote, creating images with ChatGPT's DALL-E and another generator called Midjourney may produce more carbon than driving 4 miles. Okay, so take your car, your SUV, your whatever, and drive 2 miles to the store and all the way home. The carbon that got spat out of the exhaust pipe is maybe, as Gizmodo is saying, roughly equivalent to the amount of carbon that gets pumped into the air because of the energy usage it took to draw that elephant on a beach. And again, you could say, what's a bottle of water? What's driving 4 miles? You know, I drink a bottle of water every day. I drive 4 miles, much more than 4 miles on my daily commute. That's not the point. My point is not to cast aspersions on your daily habits. Just say, look at this horrible water bottle. No. I want you to think about the massive amount of usage that these chatbots and generative AI systems are getting every single day. Millions of people are using these things. We can't even imagine how many conversations, how many questions ChatGPT is serving up every day, and the water gets sucked down. And the amount of energy usage that people use to generate images every day, and the carbon gets put in the air. And so we have an issue here. There's a couple of issues. Well, there's so many issues, but let me just list two of the issues. This choice that we are making, to bring it back to choices, the choice that we are making as a society to develop and deploy and get excited about these generative AI systems. AI, oh my goodness, everything is AI. My toaster has AI, people say. My vacuum has AI. I mean, what's next? I want a paperclip with AI. Well, paperclip is a bad example. I want a paper towel with AI inside. What is not claiming to have AI inside these days? It's crazy. Anyway, we're making this society-wide choice to dive headlong into generative AI systems. And it's bringing up immediately two big issues. One of them is the energy and resource usage, at which causes environmental degradation. Okay, so we have places in the U.S. going dry. As I said, there's water, there's scarce water already in many places, and we are handing it over to the big tech data centers. We're pumping more and more carbon into the atmosphere, speeding up climate change, and making mitigation efforts much harder because of the energy usage of these systems. That's one. And so the energy that goes in is causing an environmental issue that is going to grow worse over the years. Let me move on to what Sam Altman said, because Sam Altman is going to refer to the second major issue. Sam Altman, of course, is CEO of OpenAI, which is the company behind ChatGPT and DALL-E, and is known to be the leader. And the issue that Sam Altman is finally having to contend with is the second major issue, apart from the environmental destruction I was talking about before. The second issue is we don't have enough energy available to meet the demands of these data centers. These data centers, as we talked about with Guillaume Petron, are being installed at an exponential rate. Their energy usage is going up at an exponential rate. You know, we thought it was bad 2 years ago when the Bitcoin farmers were using as much energy as a Scandinavian country. Well, now we've got the entire world falling in love with these AI systems. Everything is AI, and we can't even if we wanted to pump the entire atmosphere full of carbon, which I'm sure Altman would be okay with, we simply don't have the energy infrastructure to keep up with the demand. So here, those are the twin issues that I wanted to bring up to you. This choice to go headlong into AI has brought up the possible environmental destruction due to energy and water usage, and two, the amount of energy that we are taxing the grid with, the needs of these AI systems are taxing the energy grid past its capacity. So what do you do with this problem? And Sam Altman took this question at Davos. He was at the World Economic Forum. This is the place. This is a guy named Klaus Schwab runs this fancy conference where CEOs and heads of state from all over the world convene in January in Davos, Switzerland every year. And they have conference panels where people talk about whatever the new hype trends are. And then there are backroom discussions where people are making very, very important decisions that we're not privy to. So at one of the public conversations, Sam Altman, you know, everybody wanted to talk with Sam Altman and give him lots of press because he's OpenAI is the flavor of the month right now. And someone asked him what he thought about the rising energy demands of AI, which ChatGPT is quite a bit. And so I want to read you. There's this great Reuters story from January 16 that with the headline, OpenAI CEO Altman says at Davos, future AI depends on fill in the blank. I'm going to tell you in a second. That's going to be the punchline. So future AI depends on, what does it depend on, Sam? So OpenAI CEO Sam Altman on Tuesday said, fill in the blank, I'll tell you, is necessary for future artificial intelligence. Speaking at a Bloomberg event on the sidelines of the World Economic Forum, Altman said the silver lining, let me just tell you what he said, okay? So the problem is environmental destruction and there's not enough energy. And what Sam Altman said is, I'm going to give you a direct quote, what he said at this Bloomberg event. Sam Altman said, here's how we're going to make it into the future with AI. Quote, there's no way to get there without a breakthrough. Without a breakthrough? What kind of breakthrough? Altman continues, it motivates us to go invest more in fusion. Say what now? Fusion? What kind of fusion? Sam Altman is saying, we don't have enough energy to meet the demands of my platform. And so rather than thinking about ways to manage the growth of my platform so that it doesn't eat the energy grid, instead, he says, there's no way to get there unless we have a breakthrough. And I'm hoping for a breakthrough in nuclear fusion. Sam Altman is saying, we're going to need to develop a kind of energy that has never been launched at a large scale ever, even though people have been talking about nuclear fusion for years and years and promising it's just around the corner and never actually delivering it. Now we've got to do it. So basically, Altman is saying we as a society had better choose to develop nuclear fusion so that my platform can have enough energy to gobble down, or else I don't know what's going to happen. Wow. So that's the choice. When looking at the problem of environment and energy grid, what we say is, let's develop more. Let's develop more energy. And let's hope that we can have a breakthrough using an energy source that we have never been able to make work before. Because any other choice available to us, like a more reasonable growth path, or God forbid we actually stop growing for a minute so that everybody can catch up, or we think about why we're doing this. No, no, no. Our choice is to invest in nuclear fusion. It's just amazing. It's amazing the thought process of some of these leaders. And as Douglas Rushkoff alluded to in his excerpt, the billionaires are not taking responsibility for these problems, even though they're the ones who are at the helm as these problems are being created in their companies and platforms. No. Douglas's book that I talked about before, Survival of the Richest, talks about how a set of billionaires asked him at a small conference where they should build their doomsday bunkers. That was what they wanted his guidance on, not on how to create a more just economy or how to mitigate climate change or how to build schools, hospitals, and roads. No, no, no. It's where should we build our doomsday bunkers so that we can ride out the apocalypse that our companies helped fuel? That was their choice. And similarly, Sam Altman is saying, my choice is not to slow down at all. My choice is to accelerate the growth at any cost of OpenAI, and I want the rest of you, the rest of society, to develop nuclear fusion. And thanks in advance. The arrogance and the cluelessness is breathtaking, really. And this is the person that everybody at Davos wanted to talk to, interview, hype up. Boy, it's the leaders of today, friends. But I want to give you, I want to change gears here. I want to give you a different, actually, you know what I want to do? I want to take a palate cleanser break, which will segue into the next section, which is going to be a little bit better news than what this has been. I'm going to play you a couple of minutes of a comedy routine by Sam Morril, who's a New York-based comedian, up-and-coming guy who's doing real well. And it's thanks to my friend DJ Irwin Chusid for pointing this out to me. Sam Morril, during his comedy routine, says something very amusing about social media. First, he's going to talk about TikTok, and I guess we could say our choices when we choose to use our time on TikTok. And then he's going to say something about a choice that Mark Zuckerberg made around Facebook. So two choices. One choice is from the users and one choice from a tech billionaire. So here's Sam Morril. And again, thanks to Irwin Chusid for this.
Good you came out, you know. It's good to stay off the social media. It's poison. I mean, I'm on it, but it's not good. And TikTok is crack, that stuff. It's not good for you. You know the feeling when you put down a book and you're like, ah. Whenever I get off TikTok, it's the exact opposite feeling. I'm on there for 20 minutes. I get off and I'm like, what just happened? That wasn't good. And they get this algorithm that's for you, so it hooks you. It's whatever you like, it keeps you on. Apparently, what I like is men eating sandwiches. That's what I like. They just keep, usually in a car of some sort. They often rate the sandwich. I get a lot of dudes just in a car like, we're going to see if Wendy's fast food is overrated or underrated. Then you just watch. Properly rated. That's all he does? 19 million views? I'm working pretty hard on my act over here. Who's watching this? Then he's like, next up, Domino's. And I'm like, I do want to see how it's rated. Honestly, I understand the appeal. TikTok, Facebook, and you know, or Meta. I'm sorry, they're Meta now. They changed. Like, we're supposed to forget all the horrible things they've done to all of us. The stealing our data. They're like, we're Meta. That wasn't us. We're Meta now. It's like if Bill Cosby was like, call me William. I'm actually... Yeah, you can trust me. It's William.
And that, again, was Sam Morril talking about TikTok and then Facebook. So... He's chosen to spend some time on TikTok, men eating sandwiches, and then Facebook. You know, Zuckerberg looks at all of the problems that Facebook has caused, and enabled and been complicit in over the years. And he goes, yeah, let's change the name of the company. No one will notice that it's the same group. So this is a segue to a better better set of news, I guess we could say, for technology, which is that there are some people pushing back. There are people saying, you know what, I don't want to watch men eating sandwiches on TikTok anymore. I do know what happened at Meta, and I'm not forgetting. There are people who are gaining this awareness and who are making better choices. So this is the flip side of what Sam Altman was suggesting for us. There is a boarding school in Massachusetts. Its name is Buxton. And they made a really interesting policy change not long ago when they banned smartphones, a total and complete ban on smartphones within the boarding school. And I guess they can do this because the students live on site as a boarding school, and so they don't have to police the backpacks coming in and out every single day. They can just say, on property here at Buxton, no smartphones ever, the end. Now, the students do have digital devices for communication, for phones, and for texting, for phone calls and texting. And what they did is Buxton gave all the students light phones. And people who've been listening to the show long enough will remember I interviewed Joe Hollier back in December of 2019, who's the co-founder of the Light Phone. We had it was a live in-studio conversation, and I have always been impressed with the Light Phone. And I'm glad to see that it's still thriving. And so now there's this boarding school that has, contrary to people's prediction that you can't take away smartphones from young people, they actually did it, and the kids, far from freaking out, they're actually doing better now. And yes, there have been some complaints, but as the there's a Guardian piece from January 17 talking about what happened at Buxton, and the Guardian piece says most everyone agrees that the school is better off without the hell devices, by which they mean the iPhones and Android surveillance devices. And yes, that includes students, you know, who agree that it's better off. There are fewer interruptions during class, more meaningful interactions around campus, and less time spent on screens. And they talked to a teacher and a student, and they're basically saying the same thing. Like, it was a little strange, it was a little difficult, but I got used to it, and now looking back, I think this is a better way to live. They even talk about how there's a photography class where kids are actually using real cameras and learning how to take and develop photos now that they don't have cameras, because the Light Phone doesn't have a camera on it. So there was a school that made a choice: we are going to relate to technology better. And in future years, I think people are going to evaluate Buxton's decision a lot better than some other decisions that we see in society today. Derek Thompson in The Atlantic on December 19, just a few weeks ago, did a survey of some research of how smartphones affect students. Okay, so this would feed into, maybe it fed into the decision at Buxton, I don't know. Derek Thompson writes, students who spend less than 1 hour of leisure time on digital devices a day at school scored about 50 points higher in math than students whose eyes are glued to their screens more than 5 hours a day. This gap held even after adjusting for socioeconomic factors. Okay, so there is, you know, perhaps a causal, I would think there's some causality there, not just correlation. There is a significant point difference, at least in math, is what the researchers were focusing on, for kids who use their smartphone very little versus over 5 hours a day. Second, Derek Thompson says, screens seem to create a general distraction throughout school, even for students who aren't looking at them. In sum, students who spend more time staring at their phone do worse in school, they distract other students around them, and they feel worse about their life. Okay, so What could we do with this data? Now we have research, and this is hardly the only research that points to this kind of finding, saying, you know, students would do better at school without so much access to smartphones. And then we see that one boarding school has already banned smartphones, and they're seeing the results right away. What could we do in society that could use the research and the example of Buxton to make better decisions? What could we suggest that schools, school districts do? What could we do within our own communities that might, in future years, when we look back, we might be able to say, you know what? I'm glad in 2024 we made that change, that we made that decision. Because the tech industry, of course, is going to be encouraging all of us to go in the exact opposite direction. Okay, so I don't know if you've seen the playlist yet, but if you go to WFMU.org, click playlists and comments, you'll see an image top and center on the playlist. And by the way, if you're listening in the future, you can go to tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and click the playlist link for the January 29, 2024 show. And you can see the playlist image there. It's a little meme image, which I find very amusing. It's a screen grab of one of Apple's promotional videos of their upcoming Vision Pro launch, which is happening this Friday, February 2nd. Apple has made a big deal about their new VR headset. They're going to be launching it. You're going to see sycophantic press accounts about, oh, it was so innovative and so wonderful, and they're sleek, and I was flying through space, and then I did this and that. You're going to see all of those from the corporate-friendly tech media. There's also going to be some criticism from some other commentators, yes, but I think most of the coverage that you're going to see is going to be very excited about this new age, this new era in computation, thanks to Apple. The message of this launch on Friday is that Apple wants you to adopt yet more technology that cuts you off even more from the world than you were before. They're going to want you to strap this thing on your face, this face-mounted surveillance device, and lose yourself in a corporate-filtered environment for hours on end. You thought that it might have been enough that we have school kids already glued to their screens, their iPhones, for hours a day. That's not enough. Apple wants more. Just like Sam Altman at OpenAI wants more. You know, these AI engines use too much energy. Give me more. Apple iPhones are already being used too much by students. Let's give them a Vision Pro. We want more time. More. More. We need more. Apple is saying we need more. Growth, growth, growth. As Ben Grosser's redaction of Mark Andreessen's Techno-Optimist Manifesto said. So that's going to be the overriding message that you're going to hear on Friday. Apple wants you to dive in more to their new technology and pay more and spend more time in their new technology than you have already in the iPhones. On the other side, you have the completely different, the diametrically opposed choice that Buxton made. Less. Not even less time on smartphones, zero. We're taking it to zero. We're going to give them a light phone that gives them enough connectivity to text with their parents or whatever they need, or make a phone call. But other than that, no. No smartphones, no apps, no social media, no time on the screen, none. And there's our choice. There's the fork in the road. Do you want to spend more and more and more time? Do you want to encourage your kids, your family, your friends, your community, your organization to spend more and more and more and more and more and more and more into the big tech, what big tech needs for engagement? Or are you going to take the path of Buxton and go less, 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 actually zero, not at all. We're going to decline. We're going to reject this. That's going to be our choice this year. And not just in terms of this ridiculous Vision Pro thing, a lot of things that are coming at us. Much like, you know, ChatGPT. Sam Altman says, I want more energy, more water, more data centers. I want you to use it more. where are the people going to be that say, actually, we might be able to use it less? Maybe we won't take it to zero. Maybe there's something we could use ChatGPT for. Maybe it's not terrible, but maybe we use it less, 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 less. That's the choice in front of us when we get to some of these new devices. All right, there's one last choice type that I want to talk about. And this, I want to say thanks to listener DJ Lorraine, who I think is on the comment board this evening. Last fall, I think it was all the way back in November, DJ Lorraine sent me an email. There's my email, if anybody wants to email me a story, clip, or whatever, my email is mark@wfmu.org. That's mark@wfmu.org. But if you go to the playlist, there's a little link you can click to send me an email through the FMU website. Either way, it gets to me. So one way or another, DJ Lorraine sent me this email in November, and she said, I don't know if you've heard anything about this situation with the British Post Office, but it seems like something you might want to cover on the show. And I thought, British Post Office? I haven't heard anything about this. Now, I apologize to my listeners in the UK. I'm sure you've heard plenty about this scandal, so I'm sorry that I'm a little bit late to the party. But I have done some reading on this, and I want to share it with listeners because, again, it gets to the power and the importance of making the right choices when technology is involved. And this is one where it's more of an ethical choice. There is a right and wrong choice here. And it may be difficult to make the right choice, but the lines are pretty starkly drawn around how to work with technology and how to react to technology. Yeah, I'm talking in abstractions here. So let me tell you what happened. There's a company called Fujitsu. I'm sure you've heard of it. Fujitsu, they have made copiers and other office equipment. They write software, and it's like business, a bunch of business technology. And Fujitsu sold some software to the British Post Office that was supposed to help the accounting for the branch post offices around the country. And it's just like, as far as I understand, it's like the U.S. Postal Service. We have branch offices all over the place here, and I'm sure there is some accounting system that, you know, here's how many people sent packages and bought stamps, and here's what our expenses were, and so on. So Fujitsu had accounting software being used by the British Post Office, and for a number of years, and I mean for over 10 years. So there's a time range from 1999 to 2015. There was a problem with that software. The problem was that the software was faulty and it wasn't properly counting up the numbers of the income and expenses, you know, pretty basic thing that accounting software has to do. And the numbers that came off of that accounting software got rolled up into headquarters, and they're looking at the reports of these branch offices. And what do you know? The Fujitsu software is showing that there's money missing from all of these different branch offices of the British Post Office. And that can only mean one thing. If software is telling you that the numbers don't add up and there must be money missing, that must mean that there is a giant problem throughout the British Post Office where we have sub-postmasters and postmistresses who are stealing. It must be theft. It must be fraud. Hundreds of them all over the country. Can you believe it? There is an epidemic of postal employees stealing from their own branch offices. Okay, so spoiler alert, nobody was stealing. There was no theft. There was no fraud. These people were all innocent. And we're talking about hundreds, let me just say 900 sub-postmasters and postmistresses within the British Post Office. So 900 of these people, honest, hardworking, loyal employees of the British Post Office, were officially accused of theft or fraud. And then many of them started being sent to prison. Now, I told you that the money didn't add up in the accounting software, but I also told you that no one stole anything. So what was the problem? Have you guessed what the problem is? If you're British, I'm sure you've you know all about this. But for Americans like me who are new to this story, the problem was the Fujitsu software. The Fujitsu accounting software had a bug, or maybe multiple bugs. It was faulty. It was generating the wrong numbers. It was inaccurate. The output was inaccurate. But here's the twist, okay? This is where it gets... We've heard about bad software. I mean, half the shows that I've ever done have something to do with bad software. So this is nothing new to Tectonic. Of course the software was bad. Fujitsu made some bad software. The twist is something different, though. The twist is Fujitsu knew that the software was bad. And it wasn't just Fujitsu. You know who else knew the software was bad? The British Post Office! Senior leadership at the British Post Office knew that the software was delivering faulty results. And so what did they do? They had a choice, okay? Your senior leadership at the British Post Office, and the report comes, somebody tells you, or if you find out, however, the Fujitsu software is faulty. All the numbers not adding up at the branch offices, it's because of bad software. And you know what senior leadership did? They said, don't tell anybody about this report. Let's keep sending these people to prison. Can you even conceive of that? And you know why they said that? Because they wanted to save face. Oh, we don't want to be embarrassed that I mean both Fujitsu and the British Post Office senior leadership, we don't want to be embarrassed that we're working with faulty software here. I mean, come on, that'll make us look bad. So why don't we go ahead and send another 100 innocent people to prison? Just amazing. So there's a woman named Paula Venels. This is Paula Venels. DJ Lorraine pointed me to her story. And so from Wikipedia, Venels was the CEO of the British Post Office during the latter part of the scandal. This took place between 1999 and 2015. Can you imagine? This went on for 16 years. It involved over 900 sub-postmasters being wrongly convicted of theft, false accounting, and fraud, and due to errors in the Horizon accounting software. In 2013, Venels hired forensic accounting firm Second Sight, headed up by so-and-so, to investigate the software losses. This guy at Second Sight discovered the system was flawed, but Venels was unhappy with the report and terminated his contract. Unbelievable. Now, Venels is in heaps of trouble. She has resigned her post. She had different awards and things. She's returning them. I mean, I think it's really hit the fan. And so it's all out in the open, and there's a lot of coverage online. And I hope I have done justice to at least the broad contours of the story. I'm not going to get into all of the details. I should have a guest on who could actually speak from a position of expertise. I'm just a generalist who's doing my best to describe this to you. But the reason I'm spending time on this post office scandal is because the senior leadership at the British Post Office had a decision. And this is the decision that many people are facing today. If you look at it from the right angle, here's the decision. You're in charge of software. You're in charge of some kind of technology platform. You discover that the technology platform is doing something bad. Do you, A, address the problem that the technology is causing? Or, B, do you deflect, deny, lie, sweep it under the rug, and try to distract people with something else and let someone else take the fall? I don't know, what a choice, right? A, address the problem that technology is causing. Or B, let somebody else experience the problems of not dealing with the of the technology. And so you, if you apply that decision to, let's say, the growth at any cost approach to Silicon Valley, or the rising energy and water usage of our AI models and data centers, A, do we address the problem? Or B, do we say, let's believe in a miracle of nuclear fusion and let the environmental destruction continue? And friends, you already know the decision that Silicon Valley leadership has made. They will not change. They will not change. But you and I, we can at least, in our little corner, we can make the better decision. Just like Buxton did. You can buck the system. And they said, we're not going to have smartphones. If there's a problem with technology, meaning kids are performing less well in school and they're having all of these social and emotional issues, we're going to address that problem. We're going to take away the smartphones, rather than saying, let's have more technology, more VR headsets, and more, and let someone else deal with the problem. You see, we can make better choices in 2024. The last thing I want to bring up is just a little stinger of an article that just came out yesterday in Forbes. The headline is, Google update reveals AI will read all your private messages. So Google has its own AI engine called Bard, because everybody, all the big tech companies, they don't want to be left out, so they all have their little AI chatbot. Google's chatbot is Bard. It's had a pretty checkered history already. You can read up on that, the problems with Bard. But now Google says, according to Forbes, quote, Bard will analyze the private content of messages, this is to say on your Android surveillance device. Google's AI Bard chatbot is going to read your private messages to, quote, understand the context of your conversations, your tone, and your interests. And this is all to, quote, and this is quoting Google, to tailor its responses to your mood and vibe. And, quote, analyze your message history with different contexts to understand your relationship dynamics, to personalize responses based on who you're talking to. Really, Google? You're going to go that far? Okay, why am I even surprised? I'm surprised that I would even be surprised. Of course Google is going to do this. Do you understand, friends? When you use an Android smartphone, you are holding a surveillance device in your hand that is being run by the world's premier surveillance company. So of course they're going to put their new shiny toxic sludge factory called Bard to the task of reading your private messages so that it can train its AI in new, even more toxic ways. I mean, you just want to say, Google, keep it classy. You never let us down, Google. Do they have a war room somewhere where they have a whiteboard, which is like, there's a headline tops, like, just put the worst possible ideas that you can possibly conceive of, and we're going to get to them as fast as we can. And someone 18 months ago said, what if we had an AI read people's quote-unquote private messages, you know, to tailor the vibe? Someone says, you know, that's really awful. That is a really terrible idea. We're going to get right on that because we're Google. So, excuse me, it's about time for me to give you your homework, because I'm just about out of time. I do first want to remind you that you are listening to the greatest radio station in the world, to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, 91.9 FM, and online at WFMU.org. And until next time, friends, here's your homework. Here's what I want you to do. Avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. And really, friends, get off Google, and I think you know why now. And I want you to stay tuned for the great Dave Mandel, to whom no one can hold a candle, who's going to be up with another great episode of It's Complicated. It's his prog rock show. And I want to play this outro track that's by a listener. It's by a listener, Haley. who is a member of the band Hyperlink Dream Sync. Sorry, Hyperlink Dream Sync, S-Y-N-C. And they've got a new track out called Unseen, which is partly inspired by some of the themes we cover on Tectonic. So let's hear Unseen as we go out, and I'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Have a good one, everybody.
And hello, everybody. I'm back after a two-week layoff, 1 week intentional, the other one planned and one unplanned, and I'm very happy to be back, thrilled to be back, and really sorry to have missed two shows. It feels like an eternity, 2 weeks. It's like 14 weeks in dog years, but I'm really thrilled to be here tonight, always. And we're going to dive in. Now, I believe some internal, dealing with some internal business here, but I think there's some kind of problem with the internet connection here. I have to investigate, but that gives me an opportunity to play a CD, a physical artifact here that requires no internet connection. It's like one of two CDs I have with me, so let's hope that the internet situation gets straightened out here. But anyway, you don't need to deal with all that stuff. I'm going to play a CD, but I'm going to say first that this show is called It's Complicated, and I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I'm here usually Monday evenings from 7 to 8 p.m. It's an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music, and always just delighted to play the tunes for you. I'm going to start with a track from this CD that just kind of surfaced in my apartment the other day. I'd kind of forgotten about it. It's a collection that was released in, I'm going to say, the late 80s. I'm desperately looking for a year here. I think late 80s. And it was released on the recommended records, well, the I think Swiss or the German division of the recommended records label. I've mentioned recommended many times on this show. Excellent label founded by Chris Cutler and home to a lot of the music I play on this show. This was a collection, again, put out by, I think, the German branch of Recommended Records, and it's a compilation called A Classic Guide to No Man's Land. No Man's Land being the name, the sort of sub title company name of Recommended Germany. A Classic Guide to No Man's Land. Really great stuff on this disc, including Dr. Nerve, Atron Fu, Skeleton Crew, Orthotonics, David Garland, Biota. I'm going to play something that's kind of unlikely, and it is a track by Guy Klusevic, who is an accordion player, not generally considered the most proggish of instruments, but how wrong you would be if you thought that. This is a pretty proggy song in very complicated series of rhythms. Guy Klusevic, this is going to be a piece called Samba de Hiccup, again, from the collection A Classic Guide to No Man's Land.